people were stung. I was stung. I wrote you an email and I was like, look, man, I'm sure you get a lot of these. Like, I gotta let you know my take too.
Okay, here's the one phrase in your email that really did stick with me, and I'm 100% gonna make shirts of this one day. You use the term dangerously reductive, and I'm like, oh, that is a perfect, that is so perfect. It's just like, it's a beautiful term.
ShooCast! Welcome, bandsaw enthusiasts of all ages, to the final episode of the 7th season of the Stitch Down ShooCast, where we talk quality footwear, how it's made, and all the things we love about it. I'm Ben from StitchDown.com. Ticho, similarly, remains Ticho and is extremely present. In this episode, we're going to be doing something a little different that we've been building towards for 7 seasons. Cutting a man in half. Just kidding. We would never do that. The cops would potentially make us stop doing this podcast if we did it. So instead, we'll be talking, just talking, with Weston K, a.k.a. Rose Anvil, the tall, amiable guy from YouTube who spends a ton of his time taking boots apart in all sorts of ways and helping a ton of people understand exactly what they're made of. We're psyched to have Weston on today, talk about how this whole crazy thing got started and evolved for him. Some of the most interesting things he's learned along the way about boots, leather, YouTube, and more. And believe it or not, Alden Indie boots. We'll probably talk about some indies. Before we get anviling, we just need to give a tender ShooCast shout out to our sponsor this week, Division Road, whose Whites boots, Wesco, Alden, Crockett and Jones, and Trickers makeups are legitimately among the best, most creative, and truly deeply usable in the world. Follow the journey at DivisionRoadInc.com. Also, the best way to support this particular ShooCast is by giving yourself the gift of a membership to the Stitchdown Discord, the beating heart of the Stitchdown Premium community, and just a hell of a place to love boots and shoes and leather and more in a way you maybe didn't even realize was possible. They're really super nerdy, but hey, we're all in it together, so it's actually totally cool way. That way. It's a good way. Also, discounts on all Stitchdown collabs, $20 off Grantstone purchases, countless random acts of boot community kindness, and so much more. More info on Stitchdown Premium and the Discord on stitchdown.com. We'd love to see you in there, and your support would be endlessly appreciated. Okay, fellas, let's do this. Weston K of or slash or Rose Anvil, welcome to the ShooCast. How are you doing? And what, sir, may I ask, are you wearing on your feet today?
What up, fellas? I'm on, of course, the Alden Indies, because we got to give them a fair shot. I'm happy to be on. It's going to be cool. I'm excited. Big fan of what you guys have done.
How are the Indies feeling?
I just got out of the outdoor retailer trade show and walked around the entire thing, met a bunch of cool brands, hung out with the Jim Green guys, and I wore them the entire show. And honestly, I only have like a little bit of discomfort. They are quite comfortable for walking around on a hard concrete conference floor for several hours. So shout out to Alden. They are comfy.
All right. Yeah, we'll get deeper into it. We can't just like do the whole indie thing right at the front, right?
Yeah, we got to save the juicy bits for the end, right?
Yeah, of course. We know what we're doing here. How was the show? You saw Gareth from Jim Green?
Yep, Gareth is in town in Salt Lake, and we hung out a couple nights ago, got to know each other because we've done like 3 or 4 videos with him. You know, it's weird because you get to know somebody, but they're halfway across the world. And so it's like, you don't really know them. But then when they show up in person, you're like, no, I already know you. And so it's really comfortable. And like, you don't really have to get to know them. And like, Gareth's a solid dude. I don't know. He's a good dude. It was a good time. We like went to a bar, got some food, hung out. We recorded a little mini podcast with him the other day. He's a very endearing guy. Whatever your perception of Jim Green is, like, oh, this wholesome, like good South African brand. Gareth is kind of the brains behind the operation. He kills it.
I call him completely lovable.
Yeah, he's awesome. I love him. Like, there's something about like the boot world and the boot community that just like has the most endearing, nicest, and genuine people in it, I feel like. At least from my perspective, it seems like that way.
I think that's pretty accurate. Yeah, I feel like one thing that surprised me is just how open everybody is about just being like, hey, what's up? I'll tell you about my brand. I'll tell you about what we're doing. Like, kind of free with information and like kind of just welcoming. You know, I kind of came into this as an outsider and people just welcomed me. It's surprising.
Out of all the, like the really niche communities, you know, we got the old heads who are like, these young hipsters, they never work in their boots, you know, and then like the younger guys are like, screw you guys, like you're too old to work anyway, like who are you talking to? So there's always that argument, always, no matter what, no matter what the video is, no matter what forum or comment section, there's always that battle. But for the most part, like people are cool with each other.
I'm glad everybody loves each other. This is great. All right, so you're wearing the indies. You're wearing them in the Thunderdome. I think you're wearing them a bunch. Let's pretend like that's not happening. What are you normally wearing? Because like on the channel, you got everything from Pacific Northwest boots to Jim Green to like foam sandals or something. Like what's your normal year-round rock? Pretend that you're not wearing the same pair of boots for a plethora of fantastic reasons. Beautiful pair of boots, those indies.
To be honest, we make so many videos and I try to at least put them on my feet a day or two just to have some understanding of how they feel underfoot, which doesn't really allow a lot of time for me to actually break in a lot of boots that I can actually wear for an extended period of time. And for what extended period of time are we talking about, especially if I keep making boot videos? So I've got those limbs that I'm always throwing on when like I wreck my feet, like these Aldens, there's like that little foam patch at the heel. It's not like skived down at all. It's very sharp edge to that foam bit underneath the like the little heel pad. And that wrecked my heel for like 2 weeks because I wore it to a concert for like way too long and it was stupid. It wasn't even necessarily the Alden's fault per se, but like I always wear the limbs after I do something stupid in an unbroken in pair of boots. And then I've got some Knicks and I've got some Whites and stuff. I've got some of the collabs is really the only boots that I actually get broken in to a degree that you actually start feeling the benefits of 30 layers of leather underneath your foot. So the long answer short, I honestly, you'd be shocked at how terrible my boot collection is and how not broken in the majority of my boots are because I just don't have the time on feet to do it.
It's a tough life, man. We've actually never talked about this, but you say it in a bunch of the videos. You were doing wildland firefighting at some point, right?
Yeah, actually my older sister, she was 3 years older than me and I'm from like a small town. Like I'm from a country town. I was raised on a farm, taking care of cows, moving sprinkler pipe, you know, that whole thing. And my sisters were some tough girls. You know, I'm the oldest boy, but I had two older sisters that might as well have been boys. You know, there's a couple occasions where someone was picking on me in elementary school and my older sister, she saw it and then she'd fly down there running, sprinting, tackle the guy, beat the crap out of him. And I'm like, well, okay, I appreciate it. But also, this is the most embarrassing thing ever. And so when she got out of college, or I think she's even in college, she started doing some firefighting. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Like a girl doing firefighting. And she loved it. And I was like 3 years younger. So I was like, I think I'll try that because they make such good money. Have you ever heard how much money like wildland firefighters make?
Tell us.
Okay. Maybe I overhyped it. It's not a crazy amount, but like, I think when I was a firefighter a decade ago, we were getting 18 an hour. And then once you crest that 40 hours in a pay period of 2 weeks, you get into overtime. And any time or any days that you set in or you step in any sort of fire area, you get hazard pay. Overtime is time and a half. Hazard pay is time and a half again. And so the clock starts the moment you show up to the station and then you're on the clock. So a lot of times when we'd be driving across all the way up to, I don't know, like Oregon or whatever, we'd be in overtime by the time we actually got to the fire. And so for that 2 weeks on the fire, you're already in overtime and you're on hazard pay. And we were on a type 2 IA crew. You know those hotshot crews? You see them in the big vans. Have you seen those running around?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so those are the hot shots. They take the very top of the fire where it's burning the hottest. And then as you go down the sides of the fire, you get less and less experienced guys. So we were a type 2 IA right underneath the hot shot crews. So we were doing some really cool fires and stuff. And yeah, that's really kind of how I got into firefighting is because my older sister was a very successful wildland firefighter. Shout out to Christina.
What boots were you wearing? What boots was everybody else wearing?
So since I was like 18, those first paychecks come in, you're like, wow, I'm making so much money, but I'm still not going to spend $600 on a pair of boots. I started with a pair of Hawthorns, which is a sub brand of Whites. Yep. And that's kind of where I learned my appreciation and love for those Pacific Northwest brands is because when you're on the crew, you know, there's career guys who they've got this really cool axe called a Dragon Slayer. It's a Pulaski. It has like the head of an axe, but the digging hoe of like a pickaxe. They call it Pulaski. And they have a Dragon Slayer Pulaski. It's got a big red carbon fiber handle, like a cast aluminum head that has replaceable like hardened steel bits in it. And they're like $1,000 or something stupid. And these career guys that have been doing it for 10 years, they're just gear guys, just like all everyone else. And so they got these like $800 custom Whites. They have this like $1,000 Pulaski, the Dragon Slayer. And so like when you're 18 years old and these career firefighters that you look up to that are hard dudes and like are kind of like that rough, like manly man, they like love Whites. They love Knicks. They love all these boot brands. They kind of become this mythical thing in your head as an 18-year-old firefighter. Then fast forward 10 years later, we start working with Whites, and that's been the wildest thing to like work with Whites and Knicks and stuff.
That's cool. Yeah, I mean, speaking with Eric from Whites, you know, he kind of laments the rise of these lighter weight Italian boots. I don't really know that much about him. He's always like, ah, these Italian boots that everybody's running around in these days.
Oh, for the firefighters?
Yeah, and it seems like back when you were there, it was still like Whites, Knicks, Drews, you name it, like somebody from up there outfitting everybody who's taking it seriously, Hathorne. And yeah, it seems like there's this shift towards, which is a big part of their businesses changing, I think, and like potentially why they realize that this push towards, you know, lifestyle, et cetera, with demand coming from that side at the same time. And they're like, all right, well, you know, Indiana Jones this thing a little bit, shift the weight of the business. But yeah, it seems like these lighter weight boots are more in vogue now. I don't know if you know anything about that, but
yeah, I've still got some buddies in the firefighting world, and there's some still the purists that like the Knicks and Whites that are just really heavy duty, and then the other guys are, you know, they like those Italian made shoes because they have, or boots, because they have so much foam in them and they're so comfortable, there's less break in. And so it's kind of the same age old debate that we kind of talked about a little bit before the podcast, is like the foam based boots versus the leather boots, pros and cons, which one's better. And I think that's the same thing as in the firefighting world.
There we go. All right. I'm just so endlessly interested in how this whole Rosanville thing got started for you. In your first video, I went back and watched a lot of the early stuff in like the last week before we did this. But dude, it was there. Like, the production value was there. There was a cat. Like, yeah. It had it all. Your hair was ever so slightly longer.
It was so luscious back in the day.
It's like, what the? Like, how? How does a man ever cut that hair? In your first video on YouTube, you're making this skateboard ring, of all things, and a commenter who watched it recently, clearly, dubs you the Odysseus of YouTube. He was on an Odyssey, right? Like, that's where the word comes from. It's just kind of, you know, veering through it all, which if you look at your early YouTube, it's like rings and leather projects and Triumph motorcycle builds and like you just doing shit that you thought was cool, basically.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, bam, Doc Martens video. And next thing you know, you're one of the most prominent shoe reviewers on the internet. Like, how did that all happen? What was it like?
So if we start at that first video, at that point, I had just moved into my very first like shop that I was renting. And about late 2014, I'd always been really hands-on. I like love making things with my hands and crafts. And my first big passion was woodworking. And so when I was in college, I would make my own furniture for my apartments because I was too poor to buy anything. And I just loved that creative process. And I got to a point where I was like, you know, I'm making a lot of these. I ought to just come up with some kind of name to put on them, just to brand them. And because I was in marketing school and I love branding, I love marketing, I love all that stuff. So I was like, let's just make a dumb little brand and see what happens. And you know, whatever. Right around that time, the business school that I was involved in at Utah State University was running a $100 startup where they essentially gave 10 teams $100 to start their business. And over the course of 4 or 5 weeks, who could generate the most revenue, whoever wins gets $5,000. And I was like, hey, I make woodwork and stuff. I'm thinking about coming up with a brand. Let's come up with a brand to do this competition and see what happens. Little did I know that coming up with the name Rosanville would eventually lead down the road 5 years later, everyone emailing me, hey, Miss Rose, we'd like to really contact you about your car's extended warranty, you know? But the name Rosanville.
Shouldn't they call you Mr. Anvil?
No, they call me Miss Rose, honestly, way more than Mr. Anvil. But I came up with the name because I was from that small town, and my grandparents were an important part of my upbringing because my grandpa was a Korean War vet, a hard worker, had a farm that we worked on, and he kind of came and got us and took us to work and really taught me the hardworking grind aspect of entrepreneurship and just, I guess, being alive, really. And then my grandma was the polar opposite. My grandma, who's still alive, is the most romantic grandma you've ever met. Not like a romance, like novel romance, but like just she's an oil painter. She had an acre-large rose garden that she curated, and people would come down and take their wedding photos and get married there. And she like loved these like really, she was like a very intelligent and classically romantic woman. And I learned a lot of the arts from her. And so when I was come up with a name for a business, I was like, well, let's just take something from my grandpa and my grandma because it had such a huge impact. Rose represents the soft, tender artistry side of things. And then my grandpa, that hard, kind of mean man who was a very impactful person in my life, Anvil. He's a hard working, you know, okay, we'll combine the two, Rose Anvil. We'll just see what happens. And then that ended up being the name of the business. And so I entered that business competition, just grinded it out for 5 weeks straight because, you know, I think I've never been the most talented person. I've never been the smartest person. I've never been the, you know, whatever it happens to be. But the one thing that I could always do was just outwork a vast majority of the people. I could just grind it out. And so over that competition, I just put the head down and just went on the streets making leather products, making rings out of coins, making wedding rings, wooden rings. I was just throwing everything at the wall to try to just make as much revenue as possible with the skills I had from all the different crafts and stuff that I did. I think I ended up raising like 12 grand in like the 5 weeks, which I was like, holy shit. There was like other people that did a really good job too, but like, or I ended up winning the competition, $5,000. And I was like, wow, okay, this could have some legs. Let's just see what happens, you know? And so I invested the money in the business, started making some jewelry. And that's where that ring first started coming from, because I started making men's wedding rings. And so after that first $5,000, I bought some more equipment, bought some more hides, grew the business for a few more months, and was prepping for the bigger business competition, which was for existing businesses. And at some point during that time, I had grown to a point where I could no longer just run it out of my bedroom, because I was getting like gold dust in my bed and just like leather scraps everywhere. And I'd try to bring girls over to my apartment. I'm like, oh yeah, maybe let's go to your apartment. Actually, let's go to your apartment.
I think you're going to fucking propose to them.
Yeah.
All these rings.
And so at some point, I rented my first shop, and it was $1,000 a month. And I was like, I just have to make $1,000 a month. That's it. Like, I think I can do this. Let's do this. And like, I'm just going to double down on this thing and let's go. I made about $1,000 a month. It was like tight. And at the time, I was subsidizing and I was really offsetting the cost of the business with mechanic projects. Whereas I was flipping motorcycles, I was rebuilding old motorcycles into cafe racers and bobbers and choppers, and really funding the business with the mechanicking and flipping those cars and trucks and motorcycles. When I was in that shop, my brother was at school for instructional design, and he had a class project that he's like, hey, I've got an idea. We've got this roommate, Schmood, who he's got like 200,000 subscribers. He thinks he can make a living off YouTube. Let's start you a YouTube channel, and just like, I'll use it as a school project. And I was like, oh, sick. Let's do it. Like, that'd be awesome. Like, I don't have to do any of the work. You like make some videos for us. And so that was the very first video we recorded, was my brother being like, let's make a skateboard ring. Those seem to be selling well. So I think we recorded on iPhones and just recorded in the corner of the shop, edited it up, posted it. And that was the first YouTube video we ever made.
No shit, man. Okay. So this is like, it's where it all came from. Because the production value is like pretty darn high for a first video. I'm not sure that there's a lot of audio in that first one.
No, I think it might have like a voiceover of me being like, and this is, I moved the bandsaw, you know, just like stammering and like not confident in anything I'm saying. It's just like, I've thought about pulling some of those old embarrassing videos down, but I'm like, nah, it's part of the story. Let the embarrassment flow through your body.
Schmood. I love the idea of Schmood. We're going to look into Schmood at the break.
Yeah, he's a roommate of mine for like 5 years. I think he's got like 600,000 subscribers. And I had an interesting group of people up there at that university, because one of my really good friends was a channel called Jerry Rig Everything. He has like 8 million subscribers. He tears apart phones, and that's kind of future in the whole story of Roseanville. But yeah, for some reason that our class up at Utah State popped out a bunch of like YouTubers and influencers and other semi-cringy things that we have to deal with in the 21st century.
It's like the Xerox PARC of 2020 YouTube. Okay, so you're doing all that stuff. You're doing some leather type videos, right? And some leather work, whatever. You're interested in leather. And then you get these Doc Martens. You got 4 pairs, if I'm getting this all right. Some are made in England. They're all different leathers. And you just kind of go down the line and give your take on what these leathers are. And as far as I can tell, that was the video. Like, that was the spark for kind of where things are today. It seems like people were interested, enraged, like all the things that happen on YouTube. What happened there? What was that like?
If I could tell you how little I anticipated any traction on that video, like I bought those boots because I wanted a pair of Docs. I was like, oh, they're sick. Like, I'll get a pair. And so I bought 4 different kinds just to like get them in hand to see how good they were. Little did I know that people are going to be poring over every single word and scrutinizing every single thing that I said, anticipating like 500 views, you know. I kind of got to that point because my brother, at the end of that semester or the year of that college, we've done like 10 or 12 videos together. And then it just kind of died off. And I was documenting those Triumph projects just as an excuse to tax write off all the parts and other stuff that I was buying for them. You know, the YouTube channel somewhat died and slowed down, but I knew there was some potential there. That Doc Martin video was literally that. I just bought 4 pairs of Docs and I was like, well, let's just see what they're like in person. I might as well just hop in front of a camera and record it and just like throw it up. I wouldn't even say that was the one that made us pop off, because the one that really popped off and actually got traction right off the bat was the first time we cut a pair of Doc Martens in half.
Yep. It was like a couple of videos later, right?
Yep. And it's kind of a fortuitous situation for me, because at the time, this must have been in 2018. And as you know, the coronavirus was in 2019. So 2018, we launched a Kickstarter with our most successful product that I've ever designed, a camera harness that's ergonomically designed. It doesn't pinch or pull. It doesn't get your hair. We sold $500,000 of camera harnesses on the Kickstarter pre-sale. And I was like, whoa, okay, we can take this leather working that I've just been like making ends meet with, like wallets and cars and stuff. We just made $500,000 on a product. And the huge thanks to that was because I was one of my friends, speaking of those guys in Utah State, being all of us ended up being influential in one degree or another, is a good friend of mine, India Earl, is a world famous photographer. And at the time she was like growing and she had some notoriety, and she really helped me design the harness. And she was kind of the tester, like, hey, try this. How's this feel? Oh, yeah, I tried it on a shoot the last weekend and it was a little bit rough here. And we slowly refined it, launched it on Kickstarter, raised that $500,000. And I was like, we made it, baby. We got a product. I'm set in stone. We got revenue coming in. I've got a leather product. This is everything my dreams come true. Coronavirus. And coronavirus shuts down the entire wedding industry. And all these wedding photographers who were spending $300 on a Rose Anvil camera harness handmade in Logan, Utah, no longer had the disposable income to invest in equipment, invest in quotations, because we all do it. We're all gear guys, right? And so that just put my business to a screeching halt. And at the time, I had like a couple employees, you know, very small. And so I was like, I got to keep my guys busy. I got to keep myself busy. Like, this is supposed to last for a few weeks. So I'm going to work on the Triumph. And I'm also going to double down on this YouTube thing. We've got a little bit of success here and there. So I reached out to my buddy, Zach, the Jerry Rig Everything channel, 8 million subscribers, and he tears apart phones. I was like, dude, what should I do? Like, I've been wanting to get into YouTube. And he's like, honestly, man, just do what I do. But just do it with leather. Just tear like leather stuff apart, review it. You don't have to make anything. You're not really having to like plan a bunch and explain a really complex understanding of science or literature, all these different things. Just cut stuff apart and review it. And I was like, all right, like what could I do? Like, wallets are kind of boring. Like, oh, I got those docks. Like, I'll just cut apart one of those docks. And so I can't even remember. I think it was just the 1460s. And so I was like, all right, let's do it.
You had this incredible quote here where,
oh boy,
the quote is, I don't know if I can rip apart this made in England boot. Let's see how this video does, and I'll make a call. Because you cut the one, and you're like, oh, dude, I don't know if I can do this other one. I paid $160. If this one goes all right, maybe we'll cut this one again in half. It was like this just faded statement that I had to like write down when I was watching this.
Well, those were my boots. Like, I only had like one or two pairs of boots, and I was like, oh, if this doesn't go well, I'm not going to cut the other pair that I'm keeping. Like, screw that.
Yeah.
And because at the time, I didn't have any money either. You know, I was still like just trying to make ends meet with a small leather working business. So it was like $190 was a lot of money for a pair of boots, you know, for a lot of people. And especially when you're running a business. So I was like, no, I don't want to cut these in half. So like, help this video out. Yeah. So that was the video that really first started popping off. And, you know, huge thanks to the J-Rig Everything, Zach from there. And basically from there on, I was just like, okay, that worked. Let's do another. That worked. Let's do another. That worked. Let's do 300 more. You know, and basically just been cutting two pairs of boots and shoes in half every week for the last like 2.5 years, almost 3 years, I think. I don't know. I can't remember how long we've been doing it, to be honest.
But the first one was, you know, on YouTube, it's, I didn't look at the exact date. It says 3 years ago. So over 3 years.
Yeah. Pretty wild.
Fuck, man. How much time have you even had to like think about what the hell just happened?
It honestly, like, I don't like thinking too much about any of that. It freaks me out because you just talk to a camera. You're not talking to anybody. And then when you post them and you see those numbers and you're like, oh, I don't even have a way of comprehending like that, people watching that. Because like, we looked up the stat the other day, the total amount of watch time, if you line it up linearly, the entire time spent watching me BS about boots and shoes is 1,000 years. 1,000 years of watch time, me cutting apart boots and shoes. And I'm like, I've been alive for 32 years and my like online existence is like 1,000 years.
They shouldn't do that to people's brains. They shouldn't present that stat.
So it's weird. The whole YouTube thing is so weird. And I think it just, and I feel like it's a strength of mine a little bit that I really didn't get into the YouTube thing for YouTube. I just was like, yeah, I just want to make some money and like get some boots and do this. And I'm not chasing fame. I'm not chasing all these other things. And so and if you watch those old videos, I'm not good on camera. I'm still not good on camera. It's just like, it's not natural to me. And so you go watch those old Doc Martin videos and I'm like, and this is a pair of Doc Martens, and they do this, and this is a Goodyear welt, even though it's not a Goodyear welt. And it's just like, you know, it's been a really cool learning experience, though, just being forced to be in front of a camera week after week, really scrutinizing every little thing you do, and not just you scrutinize everything, everyone else scrutinizing everything. And like, I'll tell you what, it'll fix your vocabulary in a hurry is posting a YouTube video. They just are like, that's wrong. You use this wrong. And I'm like, yeah, I was raised in Mona, Utah. Cut me some slack. 1,000 people lived in my town.
How much do you pay attention to that kind of stuff?
You know, there's a lot of people out there that say, stay away from the comments. Don't go in there. Like, it's just going to hurt your feelings. It's not good for your mental health. But I think because a lot of what we do is just presenting information and presenting what's inside of the boot with some obviously subjective spin on it, there's not a lot of personal attacks on me. It's a lot of just the process and a lot of like how we could improve things. And the scrutiny comes from, I think it comes from people who see a flaw in the video and they just want to like tell it to you in sometimes a very rude way. I don't know. You can use that feedback for positive means. You know, it's like a lot of people, it hurts their feelings, and you definitely do have to callus over because it does hurt your feelings. I stay away from Reddit because that still will hurt my feelings, hopping on that, some of those forums. But also, I think a lot of people that stay away from the comment sections who are content creators are missing a very good like feedback potential on how to grow, how to improve what they're doing and what's resonating and what's not. You just have to learn that like, they're just people out there. You don't know who they are. They could be a 12-year-old. Like, that could be like a 10-year-old, like freaking out about some dumb little thing. And I'm just assuming it's another 32-year-old guy that's just the same as me. And if I saw him on the street, we'd come to fisticuffs. But it's probably just some kid. So
kids do love the internet.
Yeah, they do.
Dude, it's hard, man. I did like a YouTube video with our buddy Nick Stridewise.
I watched that video. You were mean mugging the whole time, dude.
Dude, and that I went to the comments and all. It's like, does Ticho hate Nick? He looks miserable. And I'm like, yeah, I just have like one of those kind of resting asshole faces where like, I'm just like, there's a camera on me and I could see myself on the camera on a TV behind this. And like, this dude's talking. All right, what do I do with my face? What am I doing with my face? Okay, I'm making the same face. All right, I'm just going to go with this face. And everybody's like, this dude's got the worst face.
That was the first time anybody had ever seen your face.
For real though.
And they're like, and we hate it. I think I'm just going to go back to like, if I do any more, I'm just going to stand on the table and just like, you just look at my boots. That's what I want. That's the image I want to project.
Because I knew who you were before you did your face reveal, and you just were taking photos of boots and stuff. And I was like, dang, this guy's good. And I was like, he's probably just some like 50-year-old fat dude. Like, there's no way like a good looking young guy can afford this many cool boots. Then you reveal your face. I'm like, oh, that's a homie. Like, we could be friends.
Yeah, we all kind of look the same, don't we?
I'm incredibly young.
Yeah. Ben's old. Ben's the old man. I think the rest of us, yeah, we're all what, within a couple years? Late 80s, early 90s?
Yeah, I was born in 90.
But I'm an 89. That's, in my opinion, the best time to have been born. Because you grew up, you had to talk to people, right? You had to talk to people on the phone. Not everything happened on a computer, but when we were kids, we got computers. We learned how to use computers. We grew up with the internet. I know how to send a fax. I know how to, like...
Will you send me a fax one of these days? I've been wanting somebody to send me a fax.
I'll send you a fax. I'll fax you over, I don't know what I'd even fax you, dude. I don't have... Where do you even send a fax now? I have no idea.
Sounds like you don't know how to send a fax.
Dude, I know how if you get me the machine, but where are the machines?
That's up to you to figure out.
In your
out.
Grandpa's office that he never visits anymore.
Yeah, yeah. The fax will go to my father's office. I'll give you the number. I have it in my phone for some reason.
The paper goes in the opposite way than you think. It's got to go upside down. That's my fax tip.
Yeah, I feel like you're right, though, because like, I love like the generation that we were born in for that exact reason, where you got the best of both worlds, in my opinion, but also every generation says that, so take it with the biggest grain of salt. But yeah, it's like you were raised in an era before technology, so you learned that side of reality, and then you slowly got indoctrinated to the internet, you know, just like it slowly became your entire life, but you knew life before that, so you hopefully have some willpower to resist it and like be a complete human being. But I think every generation thinks they're the greatest generation. So,
including the greatest generation.
True.
they're like, oh, we're just going to take this one and make sure that we call ourselves this so nobody else can do it. Back to YouTube and videos and the internet. You've done a whole lot of these things. You've presumably learned along the way, right from the start, right? What sticks out to you after all that? Like, there's a lot of noise there. What do you actually remember?
When it comes to like boots and construction, are we talking like YouTube generally?
Well, yeah, we'll talk more like YouTube stuff as we go, but like boot wise, slice something open and you're like, oh shit, what was that, huh?
I think more than anything, the biggest thing was like how often companies lie about what's inside their products. Even some of the sponsored content, like a brand will sponsor something like, hey guys, like none of the things that you said is on your website is inside your boot. Did you know this? And they're like, no, can we send you a different boot or like fix this? And I'm like, yeah, but I kind of have to address it a little bit, you know? And so like in those videos, I'd be like, it'd be completely honest with the audience. Did this video with so-and-so and I cut the boot open and this was in there and they said it wasn't in there. But I reached out to them and asked them about it. And they said, you know, then you can actually tell the brand story and kind of start helping people understand that these brands are just like everyone else. They're just people trying to get through the day and get their job done and things slip through the crack. And a lot of times all it is these companies design their perfect product. They take it to a foreign country to have it produced. They sit there, watch them make the first 10 boots. They leave the factory thinking all is well and everything's going to go perfect. As soon as that door closes, everyone's like, all right, enough of that thread. Get the cheap thread. Get the cheap leather. Get the foam instead of the cork. Let's change this up. And that's usually what happens. And so it's really good for the brand to be like, hey guys, check your stuff out. Like make sure you guys are cutting your own boots in half. But also I think it's really cool for the consumers and the watchers of the videos is like mistakes happen and brands are willing to change and admit mistakes and faults. And I think that's one of the biggest surprises, I think, was just like how often brands are off about their products.
That's wild, man. What categories is that in? Athletic or?
All across the board. You know, I've even seen it because we make the camera harnesses and we manufacture or we hire out people to manufacture some of our custom hardware for the harnesses. We've ran into the same problem where we're like, we want these solid brass. They've got to be solid brass. We don't do anything. We want the patina. We want the strength. We want this solid brass. We make it very clear. We're buying solid brass. We get a shipment. You take a file to the piece of hardware and it's silver underneath. And you're like, well, that is not what we wanted. That's like some cheap pot metal from China or wherever they got this like chunky metal that they threw in the middle of this. And so you send them a photo and you're like, hey, remember how we paid for brass? Not brass. And they just expect you to not look into what they've actually manufactured for you. I've seen it in athletic footwear. I've seen it in boots. Obviously, like the handmade guys, they have a lot more quality control over it. But like the mass-produced boots and across the board, I think it happens in every industry that has someone else manufacturing their goods.
Damn, man. Yeah.
It's wild.
Why wouldn't it happen? Especially when it's enclosed, right?
Yeah. Well, and it's smart. The thing is, like, it's smart on their end because imagine you're a factory in China and this American company comes to you and it's like, hey, we're trying to have this hard piece of hardware manufactured or this, let's say like this running shoe manufactured. How much can you do it for? And they're like, well, we can realistically do it for $10. Let's say we'll do it for $8 and then we'll just swap out some of the materials. They won't ever notice. And that's how we'll win that contract and we'll make up the money that we would have lost by dropping it down to $8, beating our competitors by making it up by swapping out those materials and using inferior products to save money, and they'll never know. And so it's wild. And I'd like to actually show some more like that side of the boot and shoe world. It's just hard to like get people interested in like, let me explain the intricate details of vertically integrated companies and how that will be beneficial to the end product that you're buying. But I find it interesting.
Damn, man. A lot of layers to that onion, huh?
Right, yeah.
All right, look, on that, let's take a break and go investigate literally everything in our homes. we'll all come back and compare notes. We'll be right back with Weston Kay of Roseanville on the ShoeCast. Okay, Ticho, this is important. It's time to talk about some Division Road Trickers makeups. What DR does with Trickers is the Lord's work. Far too underappreciated in the U.S. Trickers make shoes that feel like boots in the best possible way, and boots that feel like they're designed to conk people over the head in a bar fight in the best possible way, which I guess Trickers would call a pub fight, probably.
A Donnybrook.
Oh, it could be a Donnybrook fight. Either way, they're just a special kind of boot. Let's talk about the favorite that you have on the Division Road site right now, and then I'll probably maybe spill the goods on something special that they've got coming up. Ticho, go.
Trickers. This was another tough one, man. I love British country boots. Trickers basically invented them. Really struggled on this one. But there was one that stood out to me, and that is Trickers X Division Road. Horween Charcoal Chamois Rough Out. Low Leg Lager on the 4497 last. And a nice old commando sole.
These things look great, man. Very simple, but it needed to come from this kind of collaboration, I think.
You know me, I love a black rough out. Black boots, you often think, I can't wear these black boots. I'm a guy who wears blue jeans. I'm a guy who wears chinos. Black boots just don't really fit in with my life. Incorrect. Because you have the option of black rough out. Nothing is better than Horween Chamois rough out. Heavily oiled.
So wet.
Feels sticky almost.
It really does.
It just ages beautifully. It gets even nappier. You can wear these in the city. Wear them out into the country. Low leg lager.
I love that choice. Let's talk about the future. The Trickers Stow, the most classic Trickers pattern. And they've got a great one coming out January. So we got a Stow boot, W2298 last. Leather is the CF Stead Polo Brown Oiled Shoulder.
I like a good shoulder.
It's a really cool leather. It's waxy. It's oily. They took the shoulder. They oiled it. It looks old. And it doesn't look like, oh, some boots that I've had for like a couple of years and worn a lot. Like, it looks like it's from the past, which is kind of one of the coolest looks in boots. Not every leather can do that.
Yeah, it can end up looking like it was made from an old chair in like the smoking lounge of like Downton Abbey or something.
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty accurate. So yeah, the Stow boot, you'll see in the Acorn, of course, the Trickers classic leather. Division Road's done it in Dublin, Suede. They've done it in everything. If everybody needs a Stow boot in their collection, and not everybody can have an Acorn Stow boot, I think this one's top of the list.
What was the sole on those?
Day and Night, which I think we've established we both love.
That's true.
I dig it. I dig Trickers. I dig what Division Road is doing with them. Everybody head to DivisionRoadInc.com. Check out their whole lineup. Keep your eyes peeled for the Stow boot that's coming up. Great work, everybody. Back to the ShoeCast. All right, we're back. Weston K, Rose Anvil. Weston, we got to talk a little more about these indies, man. We've been discussing the idea of having like a full post-Thunderdome follow-up on your feelings on these things. Like, what's the take? Give them the run, right? Give them the 6 months. Wear the hell out of them. Honest opinion, and you know, we can kind of track things back to the original video. And you know, you talked about it. You said you were comfortable at the show. Great. But I think the read and review on them we'll do later, just because I'm sure people are kind of like, well, what does he think? What does he think?
But yeah, because I want to really wear them because it was such a crazy thing that it's like, if there's that much backlash, there's got to be something that I'm missing. And so it would be a very selfish and like not true review way of doing things if you're like, nope, I'm right, 100%. I've never worn them, but I'm right. So screw everyone that's telling me I'm wrong. So that's why I'm like, yeah, let's wear them for 6 months and see what's what. Because ultimately, it's a review.
So we'll get back to it. I love it. It's a date. But you mentioned it. There was backlash. There was noise. A lot of feelings came from all over the place. And like, frankly, like to this day, every once in a while, there's like a flare up. And it's like, wow, people are still like hot about this. Did you see it coming?
No, I didn't. Honestly, not at all. It was so wild because like, but the thing is like, we've been through this before. Like probably one of the first 20 or 30 videos we did was the Common Projects. That had a lot bigger splash and a lot bigger backlash when we did that one because, you know, that was early on and I cut those things apart and we hadn't didn't have anything to compare it to. I was like, I don't know, for $500, doesn't seem like there's much in there. So to me, these are way overpriced. And then everyone freaked out. Everyone was sending us like hate messages and like proving us wrong and all these things. And the forums were going crazy. And it was so stressful because I just started doing YouTube and I was like, the whole world hates me. Like I've screwed up my entire life. You know, it weighs on you. But then we started cutting apart more of those white sneakers and like Koyos and like the guys in the Crown Northampton and Goral. And I'm like, oh, there's a lot better sneakers that are white for a lot less money than the Common Projects. And I was like, okay, like I feel vindicated about this. And that's kind of where I cut my teeth and calloused over when it comes to the backlash. So this time around, it 100% caught me by surprise because, as you guys know, I'm more in like the work boot world and the more like the less of like the casual and dress wear. And so I just didn't see it coming. I knew there's a lot of fans, but I honestly did not think it was going to be as big as the Comet Project backlash.
I mean, people were stung. I was stung. I wrote you an email and I was like, look, man, I'm sure you're getting a lot of these. Like, I got to let you know my take too. And like, and I think that we can get into that a little bit. Part of it, here I go applying this more to those Common Projects fools who paid $500 for their shoes as opposed to the educated Alden indie boot buyers. But it's like, yeah, you dropped a bunch of money on some stuff and then your world gets a little shattered, whether or not you believe that somebody else is out there telling people that this is the case, it ain't worth it. It gets you, right? You're like, no, I believe in this. And, you know, there's an emotional component to it as well. Not just strictly, like, I walked into that store and I paid for materials, you know, like a life lived with a pair of boots is something that, you know, we talk about and believe in deeply, and the shoe journey and everything, and you need a pair to go on with it. After watching the video, I was like, oh, yeah, I mean, I see why people are, like, a little up in arms here, because, like, you got people, like, in their hearts, right?
Yeah, and the thing is, too, it's like, I understand where they're coming from, and I get it. And even from the standpoint of, like, you don't always understand the impact you're going to have on things. And when it comes to an American or a U.S. business, you don't want to be the guy that kills a business. You know, like, you don't want to put false information out there and bury a company because of one person's opinion. And so that's why I was like, to really do this the right way, I've got to wear the boots. I've got to like actually test them. And I really need to dig into this thing, because if I'm going to stick to my stance in any way, I need to know for surety that I believe that and I have evidence to back it up, whether it's just like actual factual proof and evidence versus just like subjective stuff that I feel underneath my feet. I wanted to be able to really have a good opinion on it that I felt good about, because yeah, there's real world repercussions to content that you make. And you don't always know that, especially when you're like, you're grinding and you got like, we're making leather products and we've got two editors making videos for us that I'm recording and I'm trying to script things out and like buy boots, and you're hopping in front of the camera after a quick 2 or 3 hours of planning the video. And you're, cause I don't have a script per se. I have like talking points. So a lot of it's just like off the cuff, like what I see and talking through it. You just don't know the impact of some little offhanded comment. And really the goal of the channel, and the beautiful thing about the backlash, all things aside, is it forces you to double down on your process and look through everything you do and like, am I right about this? Or is there anywhere I'm wrong? Are they right about this? When they say this, am I off? And it makes you, if you're doing it the right way, the goal is to look at what your process is and see where your holes are and improve them, because nobody's 100% right. It's just part of the process of reviews is gaining that information and slowly taking that feedback in. Like we talked about the first of the podcast, is like feedback's important, because a single person or a single team can't fully represent an entire world's worth of information and experiences inside of a pair of boots.
It's really tough. And you brought it up earlier. It's a similar problem over here. And I feel like, you know, I get gun shy sometimes where people are like, well, you know, what do you think about these? Like, give me like your opinion on X thing. And I'm like, well, I've worn them extensively and I can tell you exactly how I feel. And then everything kind of tails off from there, because as you said, you can only wear so much shit, right? Like, you got 2 feet and so many hours in the day, and like a whole bunch of it is spent sitting or standing, which are basically the same thing. Standing's a little better for trying out a pair of boots, like making the content that is helping people understand these things instead of like walking 12 miles a day or something. So yeah, it can be pretty tough where everything else is like, well, I've worn it extensively, great. You know, I've tried them on and I understand like the sizing and last and all that kind of stuff. Okay, cool. I've handled them, you know, I picked them up. I can feel the weight. I've looked at them. Like, I understand. But even then you're like, I picked up one pair in a store. I was in a store and there were 80 pairs and I looked at 12 of them extensively and I was satisfied with the finishing and construction, but really like that's obviously a sliver of what any brand is producing. And then it gets down to like, well, I've seen pictures of them on the internet and like, yeah, they honestly look pretty solid. That one came up today. People are like, oh, there's this boot, this Bass boot, GH Bass, that like apparently everybody's been getting on their Instagram
ads because I was like, oh, damn, Bass, like, they're kind of back. This thing looks pretty good. And I put it in the Discord and everybody's like, oh, yeah, I've been getting that one too. People are like, how is it? And I'm like, fuck, man, I don't know. I just... This guy showed it on Instagram. Like, I think that the pattern looks cool and it works well with this sole. And, like, wouldn't it be cool if Bass was making, like, a great boot, you know, again, for $300? So, yeah, I totally get where you're coming from with that. It's tough. We kind of, like, pre-agreed ahead of time to talk this one out a little bit and, like, challenge each other's outlooks on, like, how to do essentially, like, recommendations well, right? And I think that challenge my outlook on, like, your outlook and my outlook first to begin, or, like, you know, kind of the Stitch Down versus Rose Anvil outlook. The Stitch Down outlook, especially on the podcast, which I feel like is kind of the best place to express it, but I feel like this leaks into everything, is shoes and boots are complicated, multifaceted, our favorite word on this podcast, metaphysical at their best. We still don't really know what that means, even though we read the definition from multiple dictionaries. There is a journey that you go on with them, and a feeling, and everything from, like, a last and sizing, determining how they feel, in addition to the materials that they're made with, minute differences in patterning and, like, how that makes you feel looking at them and wearing them and appreciating them and remembering what you've done together. And you could only do a lot in any pair if you truly love them and want to be together all the time. It's like kind of this, like, weird, again, metaphysical, like, kind of philosophical outlook towards shoes, where the only true answer can be decided by the individual, right? We can guide you, but we can't necessarily tell you exactly what to do, because number one, like, everybody's foot is different, so it might not even fucking fit, but everybody is moved by something different, which is, like, probably one of the worst ways to go about existing on the internet and saying, like, yeah, we're going to help you, like, figure out, like, what to wear on your feet and, like, what to spend a good deal of money on. I think that you have and it would be incredibly boring if we had the same outlook, which is why I love this. The Rose Anvil outlook is, at its basis level, and this is where I want you to challenge me, these things are made of things. There are different levels of quality of the things that go into them, and there are different levels of quality in the way that they are put together that can basically tell you what you need to know about what is good and what is bad, and cost and value are assigned to all those components, you know, really at its base root, like, is it put together well? And you can kind of calculate that into something that says, this is worth it or this is not.
That's like a really good question, because I think that really gets to the core of what we're trying to do, because through this backlash, it's really made me sit down and be like, what are we actually doing? Like, what is it that we're trying to do here? And through that, I think we really defined at its core, the Rose Anvil channel, the goal of it is to give people a foundation of objectiveness. Like, these are exactly what's inside of the boot, because the problem with boots is you don't know what's inside of them unless you literally cut them in half. So if we can build that objective foundation of, like, this layer is this, this is this, it's built like this, here's all the information, and then we season on a little of the subjectivity. Because with just straight objectivity, it's boring. And people want to be guided. People want your opinion. People need that for entertainment and for the educational aspect of it. And I think that's the goal with Rose Anvil, is giving everyone that watches that video a solid, objective, concrete foundation that even if they completely disagree with everything I said that's subjective, they can base their own subjective opinions off of it. And I think that's exactly what happened with the Aldens, because we don't disagree on what's on the inside of the boot, because, you know, you can literally see what's on the inside. We just disagree on that subjectivity. To your point of how you're expressing it before I started talking, is, like, boots have got to be up there with the most subjective products you can buy, because there's no 2 feet alike. Everyone walks different. Everyone has different widths, lengths, hammer toes. Who knows what you got going on, you know? And it's like, one boot that's perfect for one person might be the worst absolute boot for somebody else. That's kind of our goal, is just to give people the information, give them my opinion on it, and that hopefully will just give them enough information that even if they hate what I have to say, they completely disagree, now they have the ammunition to go out and prove me wrong. And that's just a beautiful cycle of reviews, because if you're really being a true reviewer, the goal is to not just convince people that you're right, but to give them the information to make up their own mind, so that they, when they go out and they spend their hard-earned money, they're putting it where they want to put it. and they understand where it's going.
And that's where it's tough, right? Like, people want the answer. They're like, well, is this it? Is this where I should be spending my money or not? Is it good? The starting point for us over here is it's definitely not bad. It's definitely not bad for the money, or we're not even going to spend the time talking about it. So that's kind of like predetermined. And frankly, it's done in a different way, right? Like, the idea that you are cutting things in half. When people complain, I was going to say, when people complain about you to me, I'm like, nobody. Nobody, you love this industry, right? You want people to continue to make these products as somebody who loves them, I presume. And it's not a given. Each individual brand is not a given to continue indefinitely. This particular industry, it's like, it's senseless to run these businesses compared to other businesses that are higher margin and less stress and less scrutinized. You put out a whole bunch of running shoes and everybody wears them and nobody cares how good they are until you do a video about it, apparently. But even that's like the higher price stuff that most people aren't buying. And nobody is getting people interested in the category and materials and all that more than Rose Anvil. So, like, let's support that and in the correct way maybe draw these critiques that, like, talking right now, which we haven't really gotten into this before, like, you're actually remarkably open to, right? And I think that that's quite wonderful. And, like, and we're not cutting boots in half over here, right? We're, like, going on faith and things that you're doing. And I think that, like, the midpoint in all of this is something that you were leading up to earlier. It's like, with the indie specifically, well, here's this material, here's this material, here's this leather board. I don't know about that. And I feel like the resounding answer from a lot of people in the I'm going to say something about this video camp is, well, so what? Because I've warned them and it doesn't really bother me. I suppose that is subjective, right? The idea that, like, everybody's going to have the most comfortable experience of their life in a pair of indie boots, which is probably something that, like, I've gone out and told, oh, dude, you can't mess with these things. Like, I wore them out of the store. Literally wore them out of the store. You know, that's, like, my little indie thing. The nice thing about Alden, too, is, like, I'm running a business over here, too. Like, Alden does not give you money. It's impossible to get money from Alden. So it's easy to be honest about what, in the end, really is my own personal opinion, because I was so moved because, like this is all part of it. This is how we kind of get clouded around this, right? I remember going in, this whole story, broke my foot, got to get out of sneakers, get a good pair of boots, says the doctor. And I go into Molded Shoe in New York, which when you come to New York, we got to go to this place. It is a fucking treasure. Love you, Ron. I got a pair of Thoroughgoods, which is what I decided I was going to get. I somehow realized that they're selling Thoroughgoods in here. And I see these Aldens on the shelf and I'm like, oh, but those, like, indies. I'm like, man, like, huh. How about you turn them over? It's like, at that point, I don't know, $525 or something. And I was like, this is my future. Like, fuck. This is bad news financially. And, like, we're going to take our time and we're going to get there. But, like, I'm going to be wearing those boots one of these days. And that was like a mission and a goal. And, like, my perception of an indie boot is completely wrapped up in, like, all these things, right? And then, like, obviously great experience I've had with them. And then there's somebody who's cutting them in half and saying, like, D-d-d-d, and, like, I don't know about that. And you're like, but no. So I totally get the reaction to it. In the end, the whole thing is just, it's goddamn tricky. And, like, people want the answers. People really, really want the answers of what the hell they're supposed to do. As soon as subjectivity comes into it, it's tough, man. It's tough.
Yeah, and I feel like with the Aldens, with the leather board thing, is even that, because we've cut apart so many different boots, we've got a pretty clear time, not even timeline, what would you call it? Like, starting at $20 all the way up to $2,000. We've got hundreds of boots to line out of what's inside a $75 boot, a $90 boot, $100 boot, $110, $100. And so we have this unique thing where we can take any cross section, regardless of the price, and be like, okay, where does this lie on this spectrum of price? If I look at these materials, okay, this is a lot more similar to the $300 boots than it is the $600 boots. And so that's kind of the tricky thing, is when subjectivity and objectivity start to mesh and meld. And ultimately, does it matter? If you like the boots and you spend the money on them, what does it matter if some guy on YouTube says they're not worth the money? Like, what do you guys think that core thing was? Because, you know, maybe we hurt Alden's stock. Who knows? Did we steal anybody's Aldens? No. Did we say Alden was a terrible company? Did we even say it was a bad boot? We didn't even say it was a bad boot. So what do you guys feel like is at the core of people getting upset at somebody online saying these boots are overpriced? Where do you think that comes from?
I totally know where it comes from, man, because I watched that video the day it came out. Everybody was talking about it. You know, I've got a pair of Indies I've had for 6 years. I've been wearing Aldens for 8-9 years. It's a brand I like. It's a brand I've enjoyed. It's a brand I got married in. You know,
same.
It's like you get emotional with it. You get emotional with it. I love the fact that it's, you know, it's kind of the last East Coast manufacturer that's still out here making a lot of Goodyear welted stuff. And I watched the video and was like, you're scraping away at the leather and you're showing it. And I'm like, but those aren't my Indies. You know what I mean? Like, that's not how mine have aged. Obviously, it's a different leather than the pair, what I have on mine, or, you know, it's changed, or they got a bad batch, or whatever, you know, whatever happened with that leather. You started scraping it and it looked bad. You weren't wrong to do that and say, this is kind of crappy. I watched the video again today because I knew we were going to talk about this, and so many people have brought it up to me. You're right. Everything in that video is objectively correct, right? There's nothing that you say in the video.
Neocork. You trash in Neocork and it's actually like I hike in it.
Yeah, that's actually a perfect example of the bigger thing, right? Because do all you guys live in New York?
Outside, we live outside of New York. We'll tell you we do, but we don't.
So my concept of like boots is like a completely different thing, and outsole and what's grippy and what's not. So it's like, yeah, like no matter what, to me, who as a guy who's like in snow and water and hikes, like not like flat hikes, but like hike steep stuff, hunts, is in like rocks and stuff. It's just it's not that you guys are wrong or that I'm wrong about what traction means and what slippery means. It's just another one of those subjective things where it's like, yeah, to me, a flat sole, no matter how grippy that rubber is always going to be less grippy on hikes than a big luggy sole, because I come from that, like the firefighting world and the hunting world, where you're up in loose gravel and loose rocks, and there's a very huge difference between a flat sole and a luggy grippy sole. And so it's like, nobody's wrong, because it depends on the environment and the conditions that you're wearing the boots. And so, yeah, it's just honestly, despite the hatred and the backlash and the back and forth, and it really is a wonderful exercise in reviews and trusting reviews and criticizing reviews and improving the processes and what a review is and what is really you know, like, I honestly think maybe Alden took a slight hit from this, but I really think at the end of the day, this will ultimately be a very positive thing for the majority of people involved, because it's already been hugely beneficial to me. That video doesn't have like a crazy amount of views, but because of the backlash, like I've said ad nauseum at this point in this podcast, is like, it really does force you to like, okay, there's a lot of backlash. What am I doing wrong? I need to look at this thing. I think ultimately it's going to be a really positive thing for everyone involved.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, man, because it has sparked this conversation about components, about value, about all these things that go into these boots. And it's like, yeah, like objectively, everything you just said about the Neocork sole is correct, but like, I still love wearing it, right? Like, subjectively, it's a good sole. It's a sole I've found to be comfortable, hard wearing, great for doing work, right? Like, I pop them on if I'm doing work around the house. It's like the perfect boot for that, right? You run a Home Depot, whatever. That's me. That's subjectively, it's a great outsole for me. It's a great boot for me. A leatherboard insole is also subjectively good for me, right? I find that having something lightweight, it's going to break in. It's going to be comfortable. Pretty much you can walk out the store wearing them. You know, you can't do that in a lot of these heavy, full, thick leather insole, double midsole, that kind of stuff, right? You're going to work on it for a couple months to really get them broken in. Where this is a boot, you can recommend a pair of Aldens to somebody new to this hobby, new to this whole world. My brother-in-law has a pair of 403s that he was his first pair of Goodyear welted boots. Wears the heck out of them, loves them. It sold him on the whole lifestyle. He's like, I get it now. I've got leather under my foot. Whether it's a leather board, I think Alden would say we've made a choice. Like, we chose to do this, you know, for a reason. You know, whether it's moisture, whether it's weight, whether it's whatever, they're saying, you know, this is our design. This is what we think a boot should be, and this is what we're gonna manufacture here on the East Coast of the United States. Subjectively, it works for me. I subjectively enjoy Aldens. And I also think that objectively, you didn't say anything wrong in the video. Like, you can watch the video, agree that it's objectively all correct, and still come to the conclusion that Aldens are worth the money. And I don't think they're overpriced. I've paid full price for them a dozen times. I think that's still valid. I don't think you needed to explain all that in your video for it to be a good video or a good review, right? Like, you have your perspective on it. You're providing a ton of insight. Like, I've watched a bunch of your videos before because I freaking love seeing boots cut open. Like, it's cool. Like, what is inside here, right? It's something that you could look at a picture on Instagram and, like, you don't really know, right? Like, you don't know what's in it. Now you have somebody providing a service, really, to this community of saying, here's what's actually in there. It's like there's multiple perspectives on reviews of, like, what is good, what is bad, what is value. Ultimately, it is all subjective.
Yeah, and I could definitely do a better job at, like, explaining the parameters in which I'm judging something. Because even the other day, you know, we did Nick's new Chelsea boot. And in that video, you know, as I was talking about, yeah, the differences between a foam-based boot versus a leather boot. And I was like, with these, like, Blundstones, you'll wear them out in 6 months. And in my head, I was like, on the work site, if you're really working in these, like, working constructions, they're only going to last 6 months. But to the rest of the world, they're like, no, they last longer than 6 months.
Yeah, my wife's
about?
Had hers for 4 years yeah. and wears them constantly, but, like, not the way that you think, you know? Like, that context really is, like, on to stay on, like, the outsole question, like, the way that you put that earlier, like, oh, yeah, you shouldn't be wearing that thing for any of that stuff. But most people watching, actually, I don't know what your audience looks like, but you have to imagine that, you know, more than half of them also aren't living that life, like hunting and climbing incredibly high mountains and, you know, putting the fire out while getting that overtime and hazard pay. Yeah, I mean, that's where to hear all these different things that we're saying that, like, should seemingly be in conflict, but actually, like, we're all just correct about it. I mean, it's tough, right? Like, we at Stitchdown, you know, we started out with, like, a whole lot of reviews. There's an indie review from, I don't know, 4+ years ago that I had on these indies that, like, everybody reads, and Iron Ranger and all that stuff. And that's, like, kind of how the site started out. And I've moved away from that, like, to be like, okay, we're going to review things, but really we're going to, like, help you understand something else. And you're going to be the reviewer in the end of all this information, because, like, that pressure is very real. And, like, I guess, you know, a question to you is, do you feel pressure to say good or bad? Like, worth it or not in these videos, given just, like, the nature of the platform, especially, like, YouTube kind of, you know, that's a lot of what happens on the platform is, all right, I need my answer. Like, what am I supposed to do? You know, like, I love Wirecutter. Like, I need a product for my home. Like, I'm Googling that type of product and Wirecutter, and I'm like, all right, they told me the toaster. Great. That's it. And to me, footwear is different than that. It's, believe it or not, I believe that great boots are different than toasters. One of the boldest things I've ever said in my life. But, like, do you feel that? Do you feel that pressure, you know, because of the platform or because of what people expect from you in terms of audience to say good or bad?
Yeah. So are you asking me, like, do I feel pressure from the brands? Are you asking if I feel pressure to give my opinion?
Like, personal pressure, like audience pressure, not from the brands, but to say the viewer deserves something at the end of this and I'm going to give it to them.
I think it's fair pressure because there definitely is pressure. But what we really provide for the consumer of our content is it's a utility and it's entertainment, because I think it's like something like 80% of purchases online, people go to some sort of research, whether it's through a forum or YouTube, to get opinions on it. And so people are searching for opinions on products and they're using YouTube as that utility of, like, okay, I need to do my research. I need to do my due diligence. And also, if it happens to be entertaining, great. And so I think it's part of the deal of what we do is, like, you almost have to give your opinion, because not everybody wants to watch 300 Rose Anvil videos to understand the full spectrum of what's good, what's bad, understand the nuances and the subjectivity, objectivity, all this stuff. They just want to watch a video, kind of understand it, and know what the host thinks is good and bad and if it's worth it or not. And so, yeah, I think there's pressure, but I think it's fair pressure. And honestly, you want to know the thing that caught me the most off guard with the Alden thing? It wasn't like the hatred. It wasn't like the super rude DMs people would send. Some people send the rudest stuff. I'm like, bro, relax. I'm a guy too. I get my feelings hurt. But the craziest thing that caught me the most off guard was, like, when I saw that backlash, I was like, okay, let's give it a fair shot. We posted a video on the Rose Anvil 2 channel after I got these boots. I'm like, I think it's only fair to give these things a second shot. So I got the best boots out of the best leather, and I'm going to wear them over the Thunderdome, and I'm going to give them a fair shot, wear them for 6 months. That comment section people, how dare you? You sold out. You let them get to you. How could you ever like let the backlash get to you? You're a sellout. Like, screw you. And like, all right. Like, and so not everybody, but there's a good amount of comments who are like, no, stick to your guns. You were right. Stick to your guns. I'm like, no, you guys are missing the whole point of what we do. Like, if you really believe that your argument is so correct that it's not even worth revisiting, you should have zero fear of a reviewer wearing them for 6 months and coming to a different conclusion. So, you know, there's a lot of these like little fears deep inside people that some of these videos just trigger, and it just brings out some really intense emotions from people, even if they're your fans. Cause I like, you know, you get used to seeing some of the same commenters. They comment on every video. Dude, we had some long-term commenters turning on us, and I'm like, hey bro, I thought we were tight. I thought you were like one of my biggest fans. I love you. Please come back. You know, it was wild.
Man. So it all, in the end, it all is emotional. Even the objectivity is emotional. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's wild. But that's part of like the internet and YouTube. And like after you see it for what it is, and honestly, like the YouTube and all that backlash stuff has been a really big thing in my personal life and my personal growth, because when you see that backlash, you're like, oh, these are like the people that I care about most. These are people like I should value their opinion just as much as my brothers or my best friends or my family. But it's like, no, they're just random people. And like, they could be a 12-year-old. They could be a 60-year-old. Like, you don't know them. They could be mentally ill. They could be the smartest person alive. They could be any kind of person, but you don't know them. You'll never meet them. You'll never know what they really think. And any time I've actually met a person in real life that had some beef with me, or like that, like, started off the conversation with like, hey, I hate that you do this. We eventually find common ground, and it usually ends up with a decent conversation, because when you actually meet people in real life, you find you have more common interests. And so for me, I haven't fully fleshed this out in my mind, but I'm like, the commenters, you can only give them like 1% of the amount of value you put on face-to-face interaction with people that you actually know and trust. And so once you kind of have that paradigm shift, I feel like it's made me value my interpersonal connections more and really double down on like who I am and like the people around me and what do they stand for and what does that mean to me. And it's been a really interesting and cool experience despite all the hatred and stuff. If you would have talked to me that maybe like 2 days after, this would be a completely different podcast. I'd be like, you know, I'd just be an emotional wreck and like freaking out about stuff. But like given some time, you know, it's ultimately, I think it's all a good thing.
I definitely edited the email, which you did not respond to, by the way, that I sent you after the Alden video. I sat there. I was like, don't send it. Don't send it. It took some time. I think it took at least 24, hopefully 48 hours. I was like, all right, I hope this one is like fucking reasonable. Like, he needs to know. He's never going to see this, but like, I need to know that like he maybe did.
No, I read it. Like, and feedback is just feedback. You know, ultimately, it's like you're a reviewer, so you got to be open to feedback. If you're going to be reviewing things, you have to be open to review. Otherwise, you just can't be reviewing things. Okay, here's the one phrase in your email that really did stick with me, and I'm 100% going to make shirts of this one day. Maybe at the million subscriber thing, you use the term dangerously reductive, and I'm like, oh, that is so perfect. Because it kind of, like, what we do is very reductive. It's just like, it's a beautiful term. So we'll give you some kickbacks when we sell those shirts. We'll give you 5%.
I'll take an XL, man. That's all I need.
No, it's all in good fun. Like it is what it is. It's just part of reviewing stuff, you know?
Yeah. I think in the end it is like, I believe so much in the emotion of it all. That special feeling that you get that I didn't want like taken away from me. Because it makes you question, like, fuck, wait, are these one of the most comfortable boots I've ever worn? I'm pretty sure they are. But man, like what if they had like a little something extra? You know, the fact that like that this many people care this much about anything, and like the fact that this many people, not every day, luckily, but little skirmishes are breaking out like everywhere all over the internet because we love this shit so much. Right. Like that to me is when you back away, take a couple steps back, breathe, you drink your tea. You're like, OK, at least like we're doing this because we're just kind of obsessed and we love it. And we're going to support this industry writ large one way or the other. That to me is like a big ultimate positive. I'm sorry. I said dangerously reductive.
No, I love it. It's we'll make some merch off of it, and it'll make us enough, hopefully enough money to make me feel better about it. But I didn't take it too personally, because really like I only put so much of my opinion in there. Like a lot of it's just like, yeah, this is what's in the inside. And opinion. And then, yeah, I don't know. And like a part of the human aspect of all of this is like, because you guys have a podcast, you're huge in the space, and you've spent several probably hours over the last, since you guys been doing this, talking about Aldens and how good they are. And then someone comes out of nowhere and is like, nah, they're terrible. And it completely is in contradiction to what you've been saying. It's like, how could you not feel like a little bit like, well, no, I've been telling people this. And like, it's a totally understandable human reaction on all ends of it, because it's you can't separate your ego as much as you want to dissolve that ego and be like this exalted thing. It's like, you know, everyone's got an ego. Everyone gets their feelings hurt. It's just part of it.
The thing is, as far as I know, you know, we might have to dig like in a little deeper, you know, Freudianly or something. It was a personal reaction. Not for one second do I remember being like, oh, fuck, like all this professional credibility I spent half a decade building up. 100%. It's all undone by this guy with a huge audience and like, I talked to him, I have a relationship with, like, how did he do this to me? Like, it was seriously like, but fuck, I love these boots so much, man. Like, it was that. Alden, there's a thing going on with Alden right now with the collaboration that, like, was supposed to happen and didn't, and everything's being made good, but, like, I'm not here to say that, like, Alden's perfect in any way. Nobody is. If you're making this level of shoes, hopefully if you're buying a bespoke pair and paying $5,000 for it, like, those are going to be what you want, and everything else is at different levels, and generally it's somewhat appropriate to price, and, you know, the market can kind of ensure that that remains the case, right? But yeah, it was really like, man, I like my Aldens. Warts and all, right? I mean, True Balance Last really is as comfortable as Goodyear Welt Last get, I think.
And that's the other cool part about that. The backlash made me really dig into it. I'm like, why are these comfy? And that's when I really started digging into the Last and understanding. Because, and maybe you guys already knew all this and you covered it in various pieces of content, but I didn't really do years of research on Aldens. But like, I knew the True Balance Last. It's got a wider toe box, but a narrower heel, and you can buy the different lasts and the different widths and all this other stuff. But I really didn't get it until I traced the inside of the boot and really started digging into like the actual last shape. And I'm like, oh, it's like a banana shape. It like peels over to make room for your big toe, so your big toe's not pressed in. And they extend that toe to a point, not only to make it look like a dressy boot, but to hide how wide it actually is. It's a beautiful last. It's got to be the most thoughtful last that I've come across, especially comparing it to the Pacific Northwest last. Because if you guys have owned a pair, you know that last is not made after the human foot. It's made for the human foot to blow out the sides of the boot and like secure it. And it's not made for comfort. Juxtaposing that against the True Balance Last, it really makes it shine and makes you really think like, yeah, this is an expertly designed last. A lot of thought went into this, and there's a reason that people think it's comfortable, and it's very visible and when you trace these things out.
Yeah, I mean, essentially like an old orthopedic last as opposed to the whites. Hopefully, I think Costa has this MTO coming, or Guy Costa, who I feel like we bring up every episode because he's the best. I put in an MTO for him at our Division Road event on Swing Last, which is White's anatomical last, which is like rarely seen. I don't even know anybody who owns a pair personally. That will be a little interesting.
Dude, I can't even wear the 55 last. I've tried a bunch of times. It just doesn't fit my foot. Like, I've tried different widths and sizes, and like the people swear by the 55 last, and it just doesn't fit me for whatever reason.
Whites or Knicks?
Both. It's essentially the same last because it's not a proprietary last. And
I don't actually believe that.
Oh, really?
My own controversial stance. I think they look completely different. I mean, I have plain toes. I don't have Knicks lace to toe in 55, but I have plain toes in both. I can put them next to each other. You could say that the construction can make a difference, and it, you know, it often does. But yeah, I think there's a divergence, even though both brands will kind of tell you that it's essentially the same. And the fit for me, extremely different. I fit whites quite well personally, and the Knicks, I kind of can't figure it out.
Maybe next time I go up to the Pacific Northwest, I'll just steal a couple 55s. Hopefully you don't listen to this podcast, but really though, how interesting would it be to get some of those lasts and really analyze them and see what's what? Because those Pacific Northwest brands, it's tough to get some information out of them. And the information you get, they're like, don't share this with anybody. And I'm like, I hope I remember that when I'm on the freaking shoe cast and I'm spitting out classified information about these Pacific Northwest brands.
Otherwise we're left with conjecture though, right?
Dude, but that's kind of the hard thing about like the content that we make is like, you have to tell the truth because people can see exactly what's inside the boots. And so given the scaffolding that we've built of how we judge boots and shoes, people know that scaffolding. And so if you diverge from that, They're like, hey, nope, you said this 3 years ago in this one video at this timestamp that this was this. And you're like, I don't even remember recording that video, but technically you're correct. You know, so it's like they hold you accountable. And that's kind of like the beauty of it, but also like the hard aspect when it comes to keeping relationships with brands. You have to keep it real. Otherwise, they're not going to give you the credit that you want. They're not going to trust you. They're not going to be able to really look at your reviews as a review if you're just selling out in every other video and you're contradicting yourself. But it ends up burning some bridges from time to time.
Yeah, I mean, if there's no audience trust, there's no point in doing any of this, right?
You know, ultimately, it's for the audience. It's not for Weston K's relationship with such and such brand. It's to tell the truth to the consumer so that they are investing their money in what they're investing in. They don't have to know if it's good or bad. At least give them the information they need to make a decision.
I feel like I've gone through it so many times where, yeah, you just really want to love something because you know, maybe you talk to the people at the brand, you know, you have a relationship with them and you're like, I believe in what you're doing, but I don't actually like these boots, right? I try to keep it as authentically like giving my actual opinion, my actual experience with it. Yeah, there's plenty of times where, yeah, maybe I don't say it on this podcast or, you know, broadcast it on Instagram or whatever. But if people shoot me a DM and are like, I'm thinking about this brand, and I'm kind of like, yeah, I didn't have a great experience with it. You try to be honest, right? I've had to send boots back to Alden for refinishing. I've had to send a lot of stuff to get fixed. Something shows up, it's kind of jacked up, and you're like, well, I can try to shoot around this huge flaw, or I can just kind of own it and say, yeah, this leather just broke real gnarly. You know, this horse, you know, I got this pair of horse butt, and it just turned out looking super jacked up. It's a certain point, you just have to own it and say, this is what it is. You know, this is my experience as a guy who just buys way too many pairs of boots and wears them, and I like them generally, so like I'm gonna tend to enjoy them, but like, there are some drawbacks, and you gotta keep it real.
That's the nice thing about cutting them open is like the guts are gonna be the same, right? Until the factory pulls the old switcheroo. You know, it is cool. Everything else, like how that leather breaks, how that finishing is, it's so one pair at a time. Like every time it's like, well, okay, we've seen this, and like the community really helps with that, right? Like, oh yeah, we've seen it. Okay, pattern's kind of developing. Like, I don't know about this. Or it's acceptable because of the price point and like get over it. You know, there's a bunch of feedback mechanisms that can exist, but in the end, it's a lot of the exterior is pair by pair by pair by pair. And to judge a brand off of one pair is like absurd, right? Like all said this a bunch of times, like we all make mistakes. And yeah, it's tough. Like our general outlook here is we're never going to tell you anything but the truth. But we will omit things, and it's the stuff that's just, like, not that good. And if you DM me, like, yeah, I'll tell you straight up. But, you know, I'm not trying to rain on anybody's parade. I think that there's so much good stuff to talk about, and if you're paying attention, we're discussing it on the podcast, on the site, Instagram, whatever, you're pretty much guaranteed that it's going to be good. It's going to be good for the price. It's going to be exceptional, like, just period, and that can be conveyed. And, yeah, and there's, you know, this other stuff that, you know, I hope people are happy with, right? But the standards that we've set, they don't necessarily apply to those brands. And I think it's like it's a different way of doing it where I think that you're saying in some instances, especially with like that white sneaker showdown, right? Like we're going to get them all and we're going to tell you the truth about every single one of these. I respect that, right? Like it takes some guts, especially when sponsorship is part of your business model.
Yeah, it's a delicate tightrope, right? Because people are always asking like, oh, what a coincidence that all these sponsored videos are positive. Wow, what a coincidence. I'm like, yeah, it is kind of a coincidence, right? But also you'd be shocked at how many sponsorships we turn down where we've got contracts signed and we're ready to roll. We cut the boots and I'm like, I'm like, hey, so-and-so. Like if we do this review, we've got to do it honestly. We've got to tell the truth because we're cutting them in half. And we've built a reputation and trust with these guys, and it's not going to be a positive review. Is there another boot you want to do? Like, do you want to just call it quits? Like, where are you at? And a lot of times I'll be like, yeah, let's just call it quits. We don't need to like cut these apart, you know? And like, or like sometimes they'll ship us other boots and find a good one to do. But like, there's definitely a tactic to the sponsorship aspect of it. But I think we've done it well, as good as we can, while still having videos sponsored. And people are like, well, why don't you just do it like 100% objectively and not take any sponsors? And I was like, because it's a business at the end of the day, and I've got employees and I have personal goals, and like I have a vision of the future of the business, and I have all these things, and really the vast, vast majority of the money the business makes gets reinvested in the business, especially with the YouTube, with better equipment, more editors, better computers, you know, and we're constantly improving and making new testing apparatuses to try to just get as much of that subjectivity out of there. Ultimately, I think if people could see behind the curtain, they'd be like, oh, okay, this makes a little more sense. And I think at the end result of all this, people are going to be like, all right, yeah, overall, it worked out pretty well. And we got to a point where we have a lot of information and they did it as good as they could. Because at the end of the day, we're all human and it's hard to stay unbiased when people are paying you money to review their product. But I think we've done it as good as I am capable of. Especially this year where we're working on a lot more of the actual replicatable scientific tests and apparatuses and gathering enough information to actually see trends instead of like running a test once and like, yep, that's the objective truth and Rose Anvil said it and you have to believe it for the rest of your life. It's like, no, we want to be able to like really show people that if they did this at home, that they would come to the same conclusions given the parameters and the way we set it up. And that's the ultimate goal, is to just get it as scientific as possible.
Yeah, just thinking about like how to do this differently, right? Like we want to help people make good decisions, both sides of this. Doing it in different ways is, you know, important and gives people what they need to make that decision, I think. Let's do this again. Let's talk about those indies somewhere around like 3 months from now.
Yeah.
The cut in half, the break it down, the feedback, the actual wear, that is something that you can't do with every single pair. It simply wouldn't work. So it's pretty cool that you're doing it with this one, and I'm looking forward to getting in there and just like really cutting it up around that.
That sounds like you're gonna rip me apart. I feel like I'm being set up. Have you guys been scheming?
Probably.
We definitely don't have a Google Doc that just says schemes. But dude, anybody who is kind of spreading the word about this whole thing is for the better, right? The real enemy of all this stuff is people having apathy for higher end boots in general, right? It's about people saying, I'm just going to wear a bunch of layers of foam under my feet every day. And, you know, I don't care that my stuff's Goodyear welted or resoleable. I'll just throw it away and buy a new $60 pair of boots. And the fact that you're getting people educated into this, kind of seeing what makes these things so special, so enjoyable, and so cool, I really appreciate that, man. So yeah, keep it up.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. You know, with that backlash, you just never know, because we know each other, but not that well. And so I was like, God, hopefully Stitch Down guys are nice to be on the podcast. You know, you just never know. And so I appreciate you guys' understanding and letting me come on and ramble about all that different stuff. And I really think it's even helped me just chatting with you guys to see that other perspective. Because even though all of us are in the U.S., we live in vastly different climates and vastly different lifestyles, and it's rounded out my understanding of Alden's just from this conversation, to be honest.
Let's do it again soon. Look, huge thank you to Division Road for sponsoring this episode. We have sponsors too, and just being a huge supporter of everything we're doing at Stitch Down. Go to Virginia, check them out. Most of all, Weston, thanks for coming on, man, subjecting yourself to our schemes. Really appreciate it. This was a ride. Yeah, let's fire it back up before too long here.
Yeah, let's do it. Thanks for having me on.
Look, that's it for this season of the ShoeCast. We'll be back soon. Don't worry. Take care of your shoes. We'll see you next season.